When is the government coming? We need gasoline. With gasoline, you're going to bring food and gasoline and clothes and gasoline to run generators. Bring us generators. Bring us something we can eat. We're going to die if we get killed with the weather. We're going to die. We're going to freeze. We have no cars. President Obama, please listen to us down here. We are going to die. You don't understand. You've got to get your trucks here on this corner.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast.
KatieArmor.com is your one-stop shop for the most affordable body armor period. With packages starting at $169.99 and free shipping on every order, Katie offers soft armor and rifle threat rated armor up to level 4. Go to KatieArmor.com and get your body armor today while you still can. Mention this ad and receive a free tactical scarf for a limited time with any body armor package. That's CatiArmor.com.
Today's guest is Cale Nelson of the FO Time podcast, the other ham radio podcast. Cale, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for having me. It's just great to be on one of my favorite podcasts.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks so much. And it's an honor to have you on. Now, tell us what the FO Time podcast is and why you started it.
Okay. Well, it's actually FO Time, like go. But instead of go, it's an F, and it's the name is kind of wonky. It goes back to an amateur radio forum that I'm a part of. It's kind of an inside joke. But the FO Time podcast is an amateur radio podcast started on a whim to kind of connect me with some of my online buddies to give us a way to connect with each other outside of a forum space to get to know the person better, even behind their avatar. And it kind of grew into something that's a lot bigger than that. It actually wound up being really well accepted in the amateur radio community. And folks were saying, you know, this is not a joke, man. This is doing too good to be kind of playing it off as a joke. So let's help you make this into a real podcast. So the name was already there. The artwork was done. I just left it alone and kind of sucked up having a really bad name for an amateur radio podcast. And a little bit over a year later, we're on episode 32, having a blast and really enjoying sharing amateur radio with the new guy or someone interested in getting into the hobby.
Well, I think that's probably a lot of us right now, especially with Shemitah is literally like days away now. So, folks that are just now starting to get into prepping, you know, they're scrambling and trying to get food and water and things like that covered. Of course, I just did a show the other day with Paul Munson from Sun Oven, and you know, one of the things we discussed was the fact that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to wait and they're going to see what happens, and if there's some type of a collapse or event, they're thinking they're going to go on to Walmart.com or wherever and try to order a ton of dry long-term storage food. And that might not be the best plan because that might not happen. A lot of times when you think you're going to wait until you need it, it'd be like trying to buy car insurance after you had a wreck.
Yeah. Well, the wise man saw that there was danger coming. He prepared for it. It's pretty simple. It's a biblical principle. It's all right there.
Yeah. And the fool kept going and suffered for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the virgins didn't have enough oil for their lamps. I mean, we could go on for days.
Yeah.
You know, our grandparents had food in their pantry. They had stuff in their freezer. And nobody thought they was weird because they did that. We've just lost touch with where we came from. And, you know, I've got a large family. I've got 5 small kids. So we have to keep extra food here. We live way out in the country. It's 30 minutes from anywhere. And we just, call it preparedness or not, we just don't want to drive to the grocery store every day. So we buy in bulk and we have it here. And, you know, we try to stay ahead of the game.
And when did you first wake up to the need to preparedness?
Mark, that was, I don't know if it was necessarily a need to prepare, but it was just a grand awakening, for lack of a better term. It was in the 90s, early 90s, 94, 95. I kind of was looking around. I was kind of coming into my own. I'd graduated high school, doing a little time in college, and realized that 2 and 2 did not equal 4 every time. And there were just things that didn't make sense to me. So I started digging deeper and looking around and trying to find out the truth and everything. And, you know, you'll find some scary stuff out when you're looking for truth. And, well, the long story short is Y2K came and went, didn't happen. And my wife and I had moved into a really nice big palatial home. It was a lot of space for two individuals and a really nice subdivision, really close to town. And we had come off the, hey, Y2K didn't happen, so let's buy us a couple of Harleys and we'll just enjoy life and, you know, we'll just forget all that. That was a really bad idea, a waste of time and money. And we had bought a generator, and everyone laughed at us because we had bought a 5,200-watt generator for our little bitty house that we lived in. And we never used it, of course, because nothing happened. Well, it turns out that we moved into this big old nice house. It was a fairly new constructed house, and we were living at the end of a cul-de-sac. It was a great place to live, a lot of space. But every time the power went out in our county, it always went out there first, and it came on there last. It seemed that way, at least. So the generator that we bought that we never used for Y2K wound up running our big house numerous times. It probably paid for itself 7 or 8 times of the 8 years that we lived there in that home. So it was, I say that to say that it's probably just a culmination of things, going back even to be a Cub Scout, you know, always be prepared. My grandparents did casual farming, for lack of a better term, and their pantries were full of food and their freezers were full through the winter, and they didn't have to go to the grocery store every day. So you look around and it's just how we've been conditioned as individuals and as, you know, people in the society. Whereas if you need anything, just stop on the grocery on the way home and grab what you need for supper that night. And with having 5 kids and living so far away, that's really not an option for our family. So preparedness, readiness, however you want to term it, I guess we're there, but we're not digging bunkers or anything like that.
Very good. Now, when did you get into radio? And it's not just ham radio. You also had a little stint in FM radio.
I did. I worked for almost a decade in non-commercial Christian radio. And that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that. But I've always been kind of a geek, kind of a nerd. If you looked at me, you could tell. But I've always just really been into radio, man. When I was about 6 years old, my grandfather gave me an old 23 Johnson Messenger radio, an old CB radio he had, one of his hunting trucks. And a few days later, my dad came in the house and he said, "Son, do you know what happened to the battery in my lawnmower?" I was like, it's right here. I had taken the battery out of my dad's lawnmower and brought it into the house, and I was using it to power the 23-channel CB radio, talking to the truckers up the street at the TA. I had a fascination with radio from a very young age, and it kind of stuck. And I'd kind of dabbled with the idea of amateur radio on and off for years, and the Morse code thing kind of kept me away. I just always made an excuse not to learn Morse code, so I never did take the test. And then one day, I had ordered another study manual for the test, and my wife brought it in the mail, and she said, "You're never going to take this. You know, why did you buy the 4th study manual?" And I said, "I'm going to do it now for sure." You know, it was almost like a threat, like a challenge. And I took the test and passed, and went back 2 months later, took the upgrade test, and have really enjoyed it. I mean, I like talking. Okay, I podcast, and I like talking. I've been on the radio. I'm not afraid of a microphone, a camera, or whatnot. Cameras are afraid of me. But, I really just enjoy talking, conveying. You know, I enjoy conveying with people through speech. And radio, amateur radio, is just the perfect medium for that, for me. And it just happens, you know, for a lot of people, it's a great thing that they can use in their preparedness.
And I guess start out by telling us what ham radio is. And then also, if you want to follow that up with how it can be useful for preparedness.
Well, ham radio at its core, its most, you know, essence is the nucleus of ham radio. It's so simple. It's just a communications hobby. It's a way for people to communicate, whether their voice, through a computer, through Morse code, all different means. You can send pictures and talk to the International Space Station. You can send your signal to the moon to bounce back to someone else on Earth and have a conversation. I mean, it's just a massive hobby, but it revolves around communication. And, I mean, we do that all the time. So, really, that's what it's a communications hobby. And how does it work with preparedness and readiness? Well, it just happens that it's really the best answer to someone who is preparing for a problem to cover their bases regarding communications. We are such a communicative society. I mean, we walk around with our phones in our hands all the time. We're texting, we're messaging, and we're updating our pages, and we're talking to our wives, and our wives are calling us and our kids, and we're all the time talking either through a text message, through a Facebook update, or whatever they call that. And, you know, we're constantly doing that. And we're so used to that now, when that goes away, or if it were to go away, if it's a bad storm or, you know, the power goes out or something, people really get scared. I mean, and communications, we're so dependent upon it nowadays that doing without it will really freak some people out. So ham radio, it doesn't necessarily depend on the infrastructure that it takes to keep your phones and your internet and your tablets and your house phone and all those things working. Ham radio, the infrastructure is built into the operator. So we basically carry our own infrastructure around with us. And that leads to a lot of good answers for folks who have communication needs regarding some sort of event, whether it's weather-related, whether it's the Shemitah, you know, whatever dystopian fiction title you want to plug into it. Ham radio is a really good answer if you want to communicate during a bad time.
Very cool. And about what's it going to cost me to get started with ham radio?
Well, you have to take a test. And to take a test, you really need to study, do some preparation. So you can spend $12 or $15 on a book and buy a book and read the book to study. You can spend a couple of bucks for an app and study on your telephone if you're into that. There's a lot of free services that you can use, free applications on your phone. There's free services on the net that you can use to study. You can go to the library. You can borrow the book from the library. I know the local club that I'm a member of, every time a new manual comes out, they buy it and donate it to the local library. But it's about $12 or $15 for the book, maybe $20, just depending on where you get it and whatnot. And then you have to take a test. And the tests either are free, and tests are given in your local area by your local amateur radio club and their members, volunteer examiners, they're called. And some of them offer the tests for free. Others, it ranges from $13 to $22 around the nation. It really kind of varies. But it's really inexpensive to get into the hobby, to get licensed. And then you can start as cheap as a $30 walkie-talkie to talk to your local amateur radio community or through a repeater system. Or you may get a half a mile to 3 miles handy-talkie to handy-talkie is what we call them in the hobby. They're handy-talkies. But, you might get half a mile, you might get 3 miles, just depending on your terrain. Now, if you're out in the middle of the desert on top of the plateaus, you can talk a lot longer. But it comes down to you're limited by your equipment, but you're not limited necessarily by the experience that you can gain as an operator.
And then the talkies you're talking about off of Amazon, would you be talking about like a Baofeng?
Yeah. The Baofeng, the Pofeng, the Oshin, the Wuxian. The TYT, you just make up a bunch of bad names and there they are. Amazon has made someone in China a trillionaire selling those $30 walkie-talkies. You know, they're not that bad. I mean, when I got into the hobby about 5 or 6 years ago, the cheap one was $120. Now the cheap one is $16, but of course it's UHF only. The average price, $30 for the Baofeng 5R. I'm not a big fan of that particular radio personally. I like the B5. I like it a little bit better. It's a better radio. But that's just Kel's opinion, you know. But you can get these things. What scares me about people in preparedness and the $30 Baofeng walkie-talkies is they are a bear to program. And you really need to know how to program it before you start trying to talk on it. Well, the thing about that radio is it really won't legally do any frequencies that you can talk on without a license, even having a GMRS license, but it's really not it's not type accepted, they say, for GMRS use. So what it amounts to is you can buy the radio for $30, but without an amateur radio license, you're really breaking the law. And, you know, I'm a pretty decent guy. I don't try to break the law. So, you know, that may not bother someone. And then you'll have others that say, well, you know, in an event situation, all bets are off. Well, okay, that's fine. But if you still don't know how to use it now, you won't know how to use it then. So be very careful when you just start piling stuff in your cart in Amazon. I mean, you got to think through this stuff a little bit. It's not hard. It's not hard to pass the test. I mean, there's no Morse code. There's no CW anymore. It's a 35-question test. I think you only have to get 27 of them right. And it turns out it's a really fun hobby. It's more than just, you know, piling walkie-talkies in your bag waiting on the world to end.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And then I'm trying to study. Of course, I'm trying to write a book and run a podcast and run a store and keep a blog going. And just moved into a new house, and Shmita's right around the corner. So there's
congratulations.
There's
that,
a huge thank you very much. But there's a huge laundry list of stuff I'm trying to do. It may end up being that that I'm going to actually be testing in September rather than August.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I got the Baofeng, and I've been listening. I went to the local ham club. I figured out their frequencies for their repeater, and they do a net every Monday night, so I'm able to just listen in to everybody else on the net. And there's it's very active, the club. There's several a lot of people on there. So I'm thinking that in an emergency situation, at the very least, I'd be able to listen to those guys, and they're probably going to be passing information back and forth through that repeater. Now, is that repeater, is it off-grid power, or is it dependent on electricity?
Well, you know, it really depends on the club. A lot of, and I don't know, you know, in your area there, the local repeater we have in the upstate of South Carolina, the majority of them do have some sort of backup power. Now, that doesn't mean they might run for, you know, 6 or 8 hours, or some may run for days on a natural gas feed as long as the natural gas is getting to the generator. All just depending on the site. But a lot of guys, and I would bet, you know, you're down in Florida, mm-hmm. Hurricane, you know, you're just begging for a hurricane to come and wipe you off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of guys that I'm familiar with, some friends of mine that live in Florida. They're active hams, and they do practice for emergencies, and they do have contingency plans and backup power. So, you know, ham radio may not be the preparedness hobby, it may not be the favorite hobby of a preparedness individual, but it is a preparedness hobby in the fact that a lot of the work for amateur radio or ham radio, they go either way. Okay, ham or amateur radio. Those guys and gals are preparing to be service to the community in times of duress, whether it's a hurricane, the power goes out, EMP, whatever you want to, you know, just put the storyline in there. So more than likely, your local club operating on your local repeater that you're already listening to, which is smart, by the way, they probably do have some sort of backup power, and probably even have a backup repeater to put in place if something were to fail.
And then what type of range would I be, once I get my license, mm-hmm. how far would I be able to, what would I need to contact that repeater? I'm probably 25 miles away from it.
Well, you can hear them pretty good. So that's good that they've got a big signal coming out. Now you have to get to the repeater so it can take your signal in and repeat it back out for everyone else to hear. 5 watts, depending on the terrain from your walkie-talkie, your handy-talkie, you might be stretching it there. You may get in. It might be a little scratchy. You may not get in at all. But there's some pretty simple fixes to that. And the easiest one is to upgrade your antenna. People all the time, especially now with these big 8-watt handy-talkies that come out with these big high-power handy-talkies, I'm not convinced that that's any better than your 5-watt handy-talkie with a really good antenna. And you can buy a really good antenna for $13 or $14. Yeah, that's half of what you paid for the walkie-talkie, but it's the most important part of your radio system, whether it's a handy-talkie, whether it's a base station at your house or a station in your car, the antenna is the key. So you want to make sure that, you know, you can probably upgrade that. A lot of people don't realize this, but you can connect an outdoor antenna, a base station antenna, that would really increase your range to your handy-talkie. And it just takes a little adapter. I mean, it's not a... they work either way. You can put a base station radio, you can put a mobile radio, or even a handy talkie on a base antenna. That would be your money best spent, is to find you a nice antenna that would work, that you could mount to your house or to a pole in your yard, not the electrical pole, but run you some coax in, get you the connector that connects the two. And for $35, I mean, you might spend $70 on an antenna, maybe even less, but it would really increase the capacity that your handy talkie could use. And you can upgrade and go into a mobile and a base station environment, and that's when you really, really begin getting some beef into your signal.
Very cool. So, like, what I've got now, just to try to see if I would get a little bit more reception, some other things around, is I got it's basically like a magnet tram.
Yeah, 1185 tram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's got the cable, and it's runs into the Baofeng and really clear reception with that. And once I get licensed, you think that might hit the repeater 25 miles away?
Yeah, like I said, it's all dependent upon what's between you and the repeater. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's a hill, if there's a mountain, not that you have those, but if there's a rise, it may be hard to get through. But at the same time, you would really be surprised what that little bitty $21 tram 1185 antenna will do for the performance of a 5-watt handy talkie. And I'll tell you this, you can take that antenna and replace it with an even nicer antenna, and it's, you know, grapefruits and cantaloupes comparisons. They're not even close. So the more you spend on the antenna, the better you really are. But you're on the right track. You're going down the right road now.
And that's
where you want to be on the right. You go in the right direction, so you're safe there.
And then tell us what would be the next bump up between the tram and the full exterior antenna that I've got to run a pole outside.
Well, I mean, Edison Fong, a guy from California from the Silicon Valley. His name is Edison Fong. He's got a sell page on eBay. I've actually got a couple of his antennas. They're awesome. They actually go inside a piece of a PVC pipe, and they're about 30 inches tall and work magnificently. I think they're about $30 or $40. The folks down at Main Trading Company, mtcradio.com, that sponsors my program, my Photon podcast, they sell just a slew of antennas that you can use. And probably the more you spend, the better the antenna should perform. But it's not always how it works. But there are some great alternatives out there. Cushcraft makes some nice antennas. Arrow makes some nice antennas. I just recently posted a page on my website, photonpodcast.com, and it's called Where to Start. And it goes through some of the questions we just covered. And what did I suggest you do? Buy you a handy talkie, get you the connector cable and the Tram 1185 antenna. And it works great in your car. You can use it at home, too. But, a base station antenna is going to really increase what you can hear, and it's going to increase your capability to communicate outside of your house.
And then if I want to move up from the 5-watt Baofeng, what's a good mid-range base station transceiver?
Well, I'm a big Kenwood fan. I like Kenwood products. It's kind of funny. I was in as big stereos years ago in high school. I never had any Kenwood stuff at all. But when I got into amateur radio, their stuff just fits me really well. They've got a unit. It's a TM-281. It's a 2-meter, which is the VHF spectrum that we're allotted in amateur radio. That's 144 through 148 megahertz. It works like a champ. It's got a front-firing speaker on it. It's a 65-watt maximum output. It takes a minimum of course, 13.8 volts, like you would, you know, have it in your car. So you'd have to have some sort of external power source, whether it be a battery or a power supply. What we call them in the hobby is a power supply, but something to generate 13.8 volts. Deep cycle battery, if you want to do it that way. I'm not going to argue with you. There's a lot of ways to do it, but you'd have to have, you know, supply the power to it. And you're talking about multiple counties worth of communications there with a nice external antenna.
And then approximately how much would that Kenwood run?
The Kenwood TM-281 is about $140, $145, and that's usually including the shipping. Yaesu makes another nice radio. It's an FT-1900, and it's about the same price. It's got a few more power selections where you can run it down really low to like 5 watts, and then maybe two or three settings above that up to about 55 watts. Really nice rig. It doesn't have a front-facing speaker, so it's, you know, may not be someone's choice for a mobile environment, but in your house, in your ham shack, or in your radio room, whatever you have, it's a really nice radio too. About $130-140 max if you catch them on sale. Of course, with Shmita's going to blow up Black Friday, so you know, we'll have to maybe have some Black Shmita deals or something. But either one of those radios would be excellent places to start. And what it is basically you've got your Baofeng handy talkie, and your handy talkie is a dual band, so you've got UHF and VHF, and you can you basically take the UHF out of that and use your VHF.
All right. And then something like the $140 Kenwood TM-281, that's going to have the mic and the speaker, and the only other thing I'm going to need besides that's the power supply and the antenna.
That's it. You need the coax to connect the radio to the antenna.
Okay.
Pretty minimal expense there compared to, you know, buying a $140 radio. It doesn't take a whole lot of money to get into amateur radio. It just takes a little bit of dedication, a little bit of time to pass the test. You study 10 hours and you can pass it. You give it 10 hours and you'll pass.
Very good. Very good. Well, that's fantastic. And I think that it's something that, you know, if folks can start familiarizing themselves with, and then I guess it's good to just go ahead and get connected to the local ham club right away for folks that are considering this.
Oh, absolutely. That is your number one source. And, you know, that's not to say that you're going to walk in with, you know, a Doomsday Prepper t-shirt and they're going to think, oh, well, we got another prepper joining the – no, I mean, you go in as a normal guy, a normal gal, and let them know that you're there to learn about communications. And there's some clubs that are full of bad, you know, individuals, bad seeds or whatever. But the large majority of us amateur radio operators really want to see more people come into the hobby and to be able to enjoy the hobby the way we do. It's a communications hobby, and learn, and that's the best way. You know, anything you do, you learn by practicing it. You learn by doing, and amateur radio, your local club is the number one place to go because they're already there. They can tell you what equipment, or at least suggest to you what equipment's going to work best for the area that you live in. And I mean, I can tell you all day long my opinions, but I don't live in Florida. So you find someone in Florida that can help take care of you, you're in much better shape.
Sure. Yeah, that's fantastic. And a lot of times you'll get sort of older guys in there, and they call them Elmers, and they just like to take people under their wing and show them the stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I've got some online Elmers, and I've got some folks here in the Spartanburg community that have come along and propped me up at times and held me back at other times, and at the same time cut me loose. So it's just like having a dad or a granddad. They've already been there. They've done that. They've already made the mistakes, and it won't hurt you to listen to them a little bit because they probably know what they're talking about.
And then you start out with the technician's license. What limitations are on the technician's license, and what do you need? What advantages are there to getting the general license?
Okay, well, the one thing to think about your tech license is the easiest way to explain it is with your tech license, you're given pretty much all of VHF and UHF. So you imagine your local police, your local fire department, and the frequencies that they talk on, you're going to be close to those frequencies. You understand, say, how large your county is, and you see your county officers riding around talking on the radio. So you can pretty much talk around inside the county, maybe outside the county with a good, you know, high power base station. That's your technician privileges. I mean, you have some privileges on 10 meters, which is really close to the CB bands that are part of the technician license that you can get on. And just depending on solar conditions, on 10 meters, you can talk across town. You can talk across the world, and it just depends. But I think they did that just to give the technician a little bit of taste of how it is to talk to someone, say, in Europe or Panama or wherever, you know, somewhere away from your house, and encourage that person to get the upgrade, to go ahead and take the test. And that way you gain more privileges, and you get the HF frequencies, which, if you're not an amateur radio operator, the best way to compare that to is shortwave radio. So if you like listening to WWCR or some of those, you can imagine that they've got a transmitter in Nashville, Tennessee, and you can hear them, you know, loud and clear in California, up in Maine or wherever. And that's really a good comparison is when you're a general class licensee, you have those privileges. Now it takes another radio to operate on these different bands, but not only do you have the capacity to talk locally in and around your city, your community, your hometown, you know, three or four different communities around you, with the HF frequencies that are allotted to the general class licensee, you can talk all over the world. And it's really not that hard to do.
Well, that's just fantastic. Really, really good information. And then there's also, there's digital communications too that, I mean, for people that are really into the technical stuff and want to really get into more advanced things, you can do things like PSK31, is that right?
Oh, yeah, PSK31, Olivia, it's RTTY. Even Morse code is considered a digital mode, which is kind of funny to think about. It's been around forever, but they still consider it a digital mode. But digital modes, they're really cool because they take such little power to go so far. And that's the greatness of Morse code is that you can go a really long way with just a little bit of power because the signal is so narrow, it's so small, it's not taking up a lot of space in the pipe as it travels around the ionosphere. And it just allows you that freedom to move around. And the digital modes are great. I mean, I love doing that. Actually, that's probably what I enjoy most in the hobby is the digital modes. And folks, a digital mode, if you're not doing Morse code with a paddle or a straight key, a digital mode would be like RTTY or PSK31. That's text messaging over the airwaves with no infrastructure. So you're basically keyboard messaging, keyboard to keyboard, to another individual somewhere out there in the world and having a conversation with them with no infrastructure. So it's pretty cool. So it's almost like instant messaging from AOL in the 90s, but you don't require the internet to do it.
So I bet we've got a bunch of teenagers' attention now because they're thinking about Shemitah and OMG. I'm not going to be able to LOL on my buddy. So
I
need to get up to speed on all of this. Kel, fantastic stuff. Where do people go to learn more about all of this?
Well, I would invite you to come visit my podcast website. We podcast for the new guys. So we come at it at the angle, okay, I really don't know what I'm talking about. I'm learning kind of a thing. It's fotimepodcast.com, F-O-T-I-M-E podcast.com, fotimepodcast.com. There's a where to start button right there at the top right-hand side. And in that little spiel there about where to start, you'll find links to the ARRL, which is like the NRA for ham radio. It's an advocacy group that works in Washington to help protect the spectrum for the amateur radio operators. And those links, they'll have you linked to where you can find places to take a test, where you can find your local club. All that's listed there. And we'll just invite you to come by, give my show a listen. I mean, you may or may not like it, and I won't be offended if you don't. I mean, we're all just doing this for to having fun anyway, but we have a lot of fun. We've covered things from folks going to a deserted island and having to pack in their clothes and their water and their food and their radio gear and sitting out on the beach and operating for 6 to 10 hours a day. We've covered Katrina. We've gone over the Joplin tornado disaster. We've covered a lot of different aspects of just messy lives in general. So, you know, it may be something your folks will want to listen to. It's fotimepodcast.com.
And then if folks want to get started, $15 for some study material, $15 about for the test. They can get a good antenna for $40 and $140 for the Kenwood TM-281 and a few cables and adapters here and there. And they'd be up and running. I guess if you're thinking about grid down communications, like you said, you need a power supply for that. Would you be able to do that? Would you be able to run that radio, the Kenwood TM-281, on a let's say like a 35 amp hour deep cycle battery and a 600 watt inverter?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you wouldn't even need the inverter. You could just run straight off the battery.
Oh, okay.
All of the amateur radio gear is set up to run on 12 volts DC. Of course, it takes 13.8 because that's what our cars create for us, but they're all 12-volt appliances, so everything that you have runs on batteries. Even the large majority of the big high-end rigs, they still run on 12 volts DC. So I did a search in South Carolina. I can't remember. It was a couple of million registered vehicles in the state, And I said, look here, the power goes out. Look at all the batteries we have to choose from. Wow. You know, so, yeah, you know, but I mean, you think about it. But getting back really to the crux of the whole thing here with amateur radio and preparedness is that it's about preparedness. And buying gear is does you no good. You have to prepare with it. So if you do think that you are interested, or someone that you are friends with, or a buddy, or a spouse or whatnot has a tendency to understand technology, and you're kind of like just totally freaked out, and this guy's just talked over my head the whole time, give this to them. Let them go and learn. Let them take the test so they can come back and help you learn about it. But the key is preparedness. You don't buy a new rifle and put it in the safe and never even sight it in. You get it out and you use it. You don't buy dried goods and don't put them in. You just leave them in the garage. You never try them, and they might make you sick. You try everything. And ham radio is the same thing. Buying gear on Amazon will not solve your communications problems if you can't use it. So, you know, if I'm going to beat my drum, this is it. If you're interested in communications, ham radio is a great way to go for a grid down situation. But you're going to need to know what you're doing and practice and be up on what you've got before the time arrives.
Very cool, Kale. So we'll have links to photonpodcast.com in the show notes today. And so everybody go over there and check Kale out and just keep learning and get the stuff, and then get your license, get the stuff, and get it out and use it.
There you go. Man, I appreciate you having me on. I enjoy your show, enjoy your books, and look forward to the next one.
Thank you, Kale.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2. Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.